This is Audible.
Felicity Fortnum Undresses for Breakfast. Written by Leslie Finch. Narrated by Posy Clifford. Friday.
Put a foot on it, Dickie. We'll be late for dinner, I called out from the back seat of Dickie Dixon's sporty jalopy as we crawled through the Sussex countryside. I wouldn't have shouted, but the engine was rather noisy, despite conservative number of miles per hour Dickie was notching up.
"I'm worried about your knockers, Felicity, old girl," Dickie shouted back.
"Worried about my knockers?" I echoed. My boobies may have been the cause of many things, but worry was not one of them. They were doing just fine, teetering deliciously on the edge of escaping from one of my favourite couturiste, Stella Spiffner's, more daringly low-cut summer dresses. Indeed, Dickie himself had, in a stunning volte-face, recently declared them to be the finest breasts in all of London, as well he might, their nude magnificence having single-handedly, or should that be double-breastedly, saved his latest operatic production from critical and commercial disaster. He was taking me, along with his other half Fabs and two other friends, all of whom were crammed into the four-seater vehicle, out to the countryside to stay with his Uncle Rollo at Effcott Manor.
Yes, he confirmed that I'd heard him correctly. I couldn't help but notice in the rear-view mirror how much they bounced every time we hit a pothole, and what with your general dislike of underwear, I assumed that it must be rather uncomfortable.
Dickie, scolded Fabs next to him in the passenger seat. Stop looking at Felicity's boobies.
I don't mind, I insisted, perhaps rather too hastily.
The 1920s were turning into a wonderful decade to be tall and lithe, as I was, but an equally rotten decade to be enormous and protuberant of bosom, which I was likewise. Thus, any attention of the positive sort was something I was anxious to promote. Dickie was a recent convert.
Sorry, Fabs, Dickie laughed, but I promised Double F I would become a staunch advocate for her two best features.
Double F, I should note, was my nickname, it being my initials. I am the daughter of Sir Frederick Fortnum. His nickname could have been Double F, too, now I come to think of it, but it wasn't. Daddy was either known as Sir Frederick, Freddy to his friends, and Daddy to me.
I'll be singing your praises all weekend, Dickie continued. I hope you don't mind, Double F.
Mind? I said. If it were up to me, we would talk of nothing else.
Ha-ha, that's the spirit, cried Dickie.
Fabs didn't look impressed, and folded her arms over her own relatively parsimonious chest. As for the two young chaps between whom I was tightly sandwiched in the back seat, I'd been feeling their quiet gaze tickling my bouncing breasts from either side ever since we had left London. Dickie's American friend, Spurgeon Spunky Spunkmeyer, was eyeing my right booby. The Americans at least appreciated a well-built womanly form, and Spunky was an amateur landscape painter and thus knew his rolling landscapes. And Benedict Benedict, known affectionately as Eggs, was eyeing the left one, although with a far more ambivalent interest. Eggs was a lawyer in training and played his cards as close to his chest as I was unable to play cards close to mine, what with my huge bosoms getting in the way.
I doubt that you'd be able to keep up, Dickie, I said.
What's that, old girl?
With my boob-based banter, I said. You can talk about my bust as much as you can, but you'll never outdo me.
There was a pause, and then Dickie said those fateful words.
I feel a wager coming on.
A wager? Said Fabs.
A wager, said Spunky Spunkmeyer. A wager, echoed Eggs Benedict.
A wager, I squealed. What fun!
Take note, Eggs, said Dickie to the shrewd legal mind seated to my left. This weekend, I bet that I can mention Felicity's bosoms more often than she can. We'll limit the wager to mealtimes together, so there can be no cheating.
Noted, said Eggs. And the terms?
Dickie reflected.
The loser has to take breakfast on Monday morning completely nude.
These terms struck me as exceedingly generous, given my penchant for exhibitionism and general tendency to forget to wear clothes. Additionally, I had far more practice talking about my boobies than Dickie did,
At least as far as I was aware.
You're on, I boomed.
Ha, said Dickie. Then onwards to F-Cup Manor.
He hit the accelerator, and off we sped, each pothole wobbling my unrestrained bosoms closer and closer to shaking my dress off entirely, so that when we finally crunched our way into the wide gravel driveway, the only thing saving me from an early public nudity forfeit was the protuberance of my puffy nipples holding my neckline up. Jennings, the trusty family valet assigned to see to my needs whilst holed up in St. James, had made his way out to F-Cup by train and taxi me to cab, and was waiting with the rest of Sir Rollo's staff to meet us at the front door. Quite a pile, I marvelled from the back seat, then added, rather vulgarly, your uncle must be rolling in it, Dickie.
Land rich, Dickie said as he crunched the car to a halt on the gravel driveway. But pretty much skint. Don't say anything, though.
Mum's the word, I said obediently. I am nothing, if not discreet. Sir Rollo himself had also turned out, bushy of silver moustache and mutton chops, and clad in checkered tweeds that made him look like both Tweedledum and Tweedledee, combined into one huge sphere of a creature. He gave his nephew Dickie a gruff handshake.
I thought it was just going to be you and that idiot fiancé of yours. You didn't tell me you were bringing a whole brigade with you,
he said, within earshot of everyone from F-Cup to London, as the rest of us tumbled from the back seat of the car and stretched. Fabs ignored the remark and breezed past him into the house.
"Splendid to see you too, Uncle Rollo," said Dickie. "It's just three more. I hope you don't mind. You know, Eggs and Spunky, and this here is my friend, Felicity."
I was in the middle of trying to touch my elbows behind my back when Sir Rollo's monocle landed, flashing in the afternoon sunlight, on my breasts, which must have been jutting out at least a foot before me, neckline only just covering my bulbous areolas.
"I say," gasped Sir Rollo,
suddenly not quite as resentful of the extra guests arriving on his doorstep. I spread my lips in a dazzling smile and raised my arms in a continued stretch, elevating my cantilevered breasts to just below my chin. Then I dropped into a curtsy, letting my solid, tightly cleft udders dangle freely below my torso, before hopping back upright and extending a hand of greeting to the beady-eyed gentleman. "Felicity Fortnum," I said by way of introduction. "Thank you so much for having me, Sir Rollo."
"Happy to have you any time, my dear,"
Sir Rollo growled, palming my hand in such a way to let my right bosom wobble so much that, in turn, it caused the left one to wobble too. This handshake must have lasted a good minute or so, with Sir Rollo gazing directly at my scantily clothed chest the whole time. He was rather shorter than I was, and his monocle was more or less at nipple height, which made his lecherous inspection of my jostling assets all the easier.
"You have magnificent breasts."
The candidness was surprising but refreshing, and of course I could never resist a compliment. "Delighted to be providing you with some nice scenery," I said, with a gay laugh. Sir Rollo looked up from the mammaries in question to fix me with that glinting monocle.
"Best keep them under wraps, though, eh, what?"
he said, in what for him was a hushed whisper, but would have left the owner of a normal throat with chronic laryngitis.
"Lady Rosalind, my wife, not quite as open-minded about the female form as I am."
"Message received," I winked knowingly, and clicked my heels with military obedience, sending a final violent wobble through my already actively wobbly chest that, were the shoulder straps of my summer dress not protecting the last fraction of an inch of modesty, would surely have bared both my nipples on the spot. Jennings was already in my bedroom, unpacking the valise when I poked my head around the door for a gander at F-Cup Manor hospitality.
"Ah, Miss Fortnum,"
he said, standing to attention.
"I trust the drive was pleasant."
"Bit of a squeeze," I said. "There may be room between two gentlemen for my posterior in the back seat of one of those modern automobiles, but my bust is twice the width. It was worse than wearing a corset, having two arms compress the old thruppenny bits from either side. And not that my bosoms are averse to physical contact. Quite the opposite, Jennings, as you know. But there's a time and a place, is there not?"
"Quite so, Miss Fortnum."
"It feels like it may have even left red marks down their sides.
I can't see from here, but would you look, Jennings, old chap?
Without waiting for the varret to answer, I flipped the straps of the dress from my shoulders and gave my boobies that final shimmy to let the upper half of the garment flop down around my waist, and turned to give him a side view of my right breast, hand on hip, to avoid my arm obstructing his keen gaze.
"Nothing appears to be amiss, miss," said Jennings.
"How can you tell from over there by the bed?" I said hotly. "Come over here and take a close look at my breasts." Jennings approached rather gingerly, I thought, for a man who had recently crossed the threshold of soaping me up naked when I had run out of time to do so myself whilst bathing.
"Where exactly is it you are feeling discomfort, Miss Fortnum?"
he said, retrieving reading spectacles from waistcoat pocket and placing them on the bridge of his nose.
"Here, just in front of my armpit," I said, gesturing vaguely with my hand.
"Mrs. Skin is as fair and flawless as ever,"
Jennings said.
"I see no evidence of bruising or chafing."
"And what about the other side?"
I asked, and turned full 180 degrees. However, in doing so, I momentarily lost track of spatial awareness, and my jutting chest swung around like a cricket bat, thumping Jennings hard in the side of the face and knocking his spectacles clean off.
"Oh, Jennings!" I exclaimed to the flailing valet. "I'm so sorry. Oh, sometimes I don't know the power of my own boobies."
Jennings, mildly concussed, picked himself up and dusted himself off.
"No apology necessary, Miss Fortnum," he said. "I think we can conclude that your breasts, having survived not only a tightly packed car journey from London, but also high-velocity impact with my skull, fully unscathed, are remarkable, not only in their femininity, but also in their resilience."
"Nevertheless, Jennings, and I know this must be asking a lot of you, especially having just boxed you around the ears, would you mind awfully giving my breasts a rub?"
"A rub, Miss Fortnum?"
"A massage, Jennings, to soothe the discomfort."
"Very well, miss. Please sit down."
Jennings pulled up a chair, onto which I placed my pert little bottom, then rolled up his sleeves, walked around behind me, and planted his hands tenderly onto the sides of my nude breasts.
"Oh, that feels nice," I sighed. "That's it. Just rub your hands round in small circles. Oh, it feels all tingly already. You see how my nipples are puckering up?"
"Yes, Miss Fortnum."
"That's a good sign."
"Duly noted, Miss Fortnum."
"Give them a bit of a shake, Jennings. It helps to limber them up."
"Miss?"
"Hands underneath them. Yes, all the way underneath. That's it. Sort of heft them."
"Oh, they're rather heavy, Miss Fortnum."
"Nothing a strong man such as yourself can lift, Jennings," I said. "Don't forget, I have to carry them around with me all the time, and I'm just a slip of a thing."
"Very good point, Miss Fortnum."
"Yes, that's it. Sort of slosh them up and down like that from beneath, so they wobble up and down like two plates of blancmange with cherries on top. Oh, yes, that feels good, Jennings. Oh, yes. Yes, Jennings. Oh, when my big bosoms bounce and wobble up and down like this, it makes me tickle and throb all over."
"I will make sure to remember that," said Jennings.
He was beginning to sound rather short of breath, presumably from the exertion of hefting and squeezing my bosoms from behind with such dutiful diligence. I shifted a little in discomfort.
"Except, Jennings, this chair, it's awfully uncomfortable. There's something very rigid jabbing me in the back through the upholstery."
"Not for much longer,"
said Jennings enigmatically. First massage, now mending chairs. Was there no end to the man's resourcefulness? Sure enough, as Jennings clutched my breasts with manly vigour and let out a final groan of exhaustion, whatever it was he had done to the back of the chair meant that whatever it had been poking me in the back first softened and then went away entirely. "A job well done, Jennings," I said, seizing Jennings' wrists and prizing them from my boobies, before hopping up to my feet and giving everything a liberated shimmy. "I'm feeling limber again. Oh, my goodness. Jennings, you look pale as a sheet. Are you feeling all right?"
Jennings was stooping a little.
"Perhaps still the
after-effects of the little accident earlier when you turned around. Please, to excuse me briefly."
With that, he shuffled, stooping from the room towards the back stairs, to wherever it was servants went when they weren't attending to us. I bathed, entertaining myself whilst doing so by playing with my buoyant breasts as they bobbed ponderously on the surface of the water. You don't need a rubber duck or toy submersible to while away the time in the tub when you have twin flotation devices as seaworthy as mine. And then dressed for dinner. Jennings had, with great astuteness, laid out one of my favourite Stella Spiffner creations, a dress cut with all manner of cunning arrows and folds so as to appear as though poured onto my outwardly voluptuous form, a midnight blue oil slick that had crept slowly into my every womanly hilltop and valley. Disappearing, as the line of the garment did, onto the narrow, unplumbable depths of my profoundly cleft bosom, the effect was unlike that of conventional tight dresses. Usually, my otherwise unsupported breasts would, if not restrained altogether from moving hither and thither in their habitually autonomous manner, were held together from either side, and thus at least restricted to jostling in unison, a broad shelf of creamy booby flesh leaping and wiggling with united purpose. But Stella Spiffner's ingenuity had left me an item of clothing to let my boobies roam individually, sometimes in quite opposite directions. Each big round titty had its own inky shroud of pliant cloth. Consequently, any gentleman curious to know what my bosoms might look like in the flesh, and there were fewer and fewer of such gentlemen around in these stick-insect-obsessed times, would find very little indeed left to his imagination where the size, shape, and general consistency of my boobies were concerned. Even the puffiness and stiffen-up-ability of, respectively, my areolas and nipples would, as the rubbing this way and that the dress's ticklishly silken lining began to exert its inexorable influence, would paint a vivid sculptural picture of my unclothed, titanic-titted torso in this hypothetical deviant's mind. Really, the only remaining details were hue and shade. My skin, an artery-clotting shade of thick jersey cream, is of course more or less the same in appearance all over, excepting the parts prone to blushing. Really, the only tidbit of information about my luscious bare boobies that could not be extrapolated by the keen-eyed booby watcher was the strikingly rich cherry-like pigmentation of my erect nipples themselves, and the extent to which that would differ from the gentle coral pink of its soft, flat, unaroused state. But what these gentlemen, wherever they were, didn't know was that there was a perfectly simple way to find out. Much as Dorothy Gale's silver shoes had the power to transplant her any place at will all along, and Alibaba found access to the cave by uttering the words, "Open sesame," all it took was for any man to ask me politely, "Felicity Fortnum, please show me your bosoms," and lo and behold, whoever he was and wherever, within reason, we both were, the utterer of these magical words would find himself gazing upon said bosoms in the unclothed flesh, my having proudly and accommodatingly exposed them upon request. The wording was, of course, quite flexible. "May I see your boobies, Felicity?" or "Would you be so kind as to let me stare at your bare breasts, Miss Fortnum?" would have the same instant chest-displaying consequence. All I expected was politeness in the request, and explosive, drooling enthusiasm in the reaction, neither of which, I told myself, were unreasonable stipulations, given the willingness and generosity with which I was ready to share my expansive, wobbling bounty. Where was I? Oh, yes, dressing for dinner. This was phase one of the booby banter wager, and so the form-fitting revealingness of my midnight blue Stella Spiffner dress was appropriately inappropriate. There were pre-dinner cocktails in a parlour of some sort, and I was the last to arrive, hopping gaily into the small throng, boobies bounding.
"Smashing breasts, Felicity,"
called Dicky from the other side of the room, followed by a strange sudden silence that fell over the gathered aristocratic sorts. I noticed Ex-Benedict make a discreet pencil mark on a small paper notebook. He was starting a tally. The game was afoot. "Thank you, Dicky," I said. "They are rather smashing as breasts go, eh, what? I find that the cut of this dress shows my breasts off to a specially striking effect." Ex-Benedict made two pencil marks on another tally. This was going to be easy.
For every mention Dickie made of my breasts, I simply had to double his score. People were looking at me rather strangely, particularly Lady Rosalind, who had clearly never seen or heard anything so appalling. The only people in the room who were in on what was occurring were Dickie and I, Eggs Benedict, Spunky Spunkmeyer, and Fabs. Sir Rollo, Lady Rosalind, their guests, and the combined army of servants everyone had brought with them must have been rather taken aback at our anatomical candour. Only Sir Rollo himself seemed delighted, beaming at me and undressing me with his monocle so beadily that he wouldn't have even needed to ask me to do so myself. Jennings glided across with a cocktail for me.
Hanky-panky, Miss Fortnum.
Don't mind if I do. I purred at him with a wink as I took the glass, which he returned with a gracious wan smile before sliding silently away across the carpet. Sir Rollo appeared and lowered his voice as much as he was able. "Hello, Sir Rollo," I beamed.
"Hello, my dear Miss Fortnum,"
he said to my chest. "Oh, please, do call me Felicity," I said, "or Double F, that's what my friends call me."
"Delighted, Felicity, and please, just Rollo."
"Likewise delighted, Rollo."
"My nephew got it bang on just now with his remark upon your figure," Sir Rollo slurred. "You really do have absolutely smashing knockers."
"Why, thank you, Rollo," I gushed. "Flattery will get you everywhere."
"I rather hope so," said Sir Rollo. "And please, let's keep my flattery between us."
He winked the eye that wasn't currently clenching a monocle in place and gave a curt nod backwards in the general direction of Lady Rosalind. "Your secret is safe with me," I said, and took a sip of my red cocktail. I treated Sir Rollo to a subtle wobble of my unconstrained chest and exulted in response this elicited, a guttural growl in the throat and a change in his complexion from scarlet to deep purple. "We shall have to make time for you to slather my bosoms in compliments another time."
"Your bust reminds me," said Sir Rollo, "that I have 2 plump round melons of my own."
"I don't quite follow."
"In the garden," Sir Rollo explained, 2 prime, juicy gourds, which I've been lovingly rearing for the vegetable contest at Sunday's church fete. You must let me take you out on a walk to see them tomorrow morning."
"I would love to. As the proud owner of 2 melons myself, I have a vested interest in the subject."
"You grow vegetables yourself?"
"No, I was referring to my boobies," I explained.
"Oh, Sir Rollo laughed gruffly. "That's the spirit."
"Perhaps you could enter my melons, Rollo." Sir Rollo's monocle fell out. "In the contest, I mean." A bell tinkled, and we were exhorted by a butler to make our way through to the dining room, where the evening meal awaited. I was seated opposite ex-Benedict, with Dickie and Fabs across from each other, next to us to my left, and Sir Rollo to my right. Lady Rosalind was approximately 1 mile away at the other end of the table, sitting next to the short-sighted Reverend Percival Pinkerton, enabling Sir Rollo to peruse my chest more freely than he might have been able to do were she closer to hand.
"Did I tell you, Uncle Rollo," said Nick as we busied ourselves in napkins, "how much I am indebted to Felicity's breasts?"
"Indebted, you say?" said Sir Rollo.
Ex-Benedict's hands shuffled in his lap as he noted the mention of my boobies on the little notebook hidden under the table.
"They saved our production of Wagner's Rheingold," Dickie explained. "She was playing one of the Rhine maidens, and early in Act I she tore open her mermaid costume and performed fully bare-bosomed from that point onwards."
Ex-Benedict's hand shuffled under the table again.
"The other 2 Rhine maidens were encouraged to do likewise. They were ample-bosomed too, but not as spectacularly so as young Felicity here. It turned out that the Telegraph's theatre critic, for better or worse, one of the most influential men in the business, is a positively crazy about big breasts in general, and about Felicity's big breasts in particular."
"It sounds like he has excellent taste," Sir Rollo remarked.
"This clinched it," Dickie went on. "He gave us a rave review, and the show has just finished a sellout 3-week run at the Hampstead Theatre."
"We did away with costumes altogether,"
said Felicity. "The other two girls and I just pranced about completely naked for the whole of the first act, with our huge boobies in a constant state of quivering, wobbling motion."
"I wish I had seen that,"
said Sir Rollo slowly, eyes peering at my chest, which had been sent into minor undulations as I spoke.
"You should let me know about these theatrical productions of yours, Dicky."
"We did," Fab sputtered in curtly. "Dicky invited you to see it several times." Sir Rollo cleared his throat.
"Oh, well, you know, opera. Not really my thing. Sorry, old chap."
"I'll be sure to let you know next time I get my bosoms out on stage, Rollo," I winked.
"Marvellous, my dear Felicity," Sir Rollo chortled. "Is there no end to your talents? Such a pretty face, such a tall, lithe stature, these critically acclaimed knockers of yours, and you sing into the bargain."
"I do have a rather magnificent pair of lungs," I conceded with pride. Eggs Benedict's hand hovered uncertainly. "And by lungs," I said, "I mean boobies." Eggs Benedict's hand resumed its shuffling beneath the table. The first course arrived. I had the usual problem of my bust jutting so far forward that it obscured the part of the table where the food goes in front of me.
"Excuse me, madam,"
said Sir Rollo's butler, as he tried to find an angle at which to approach with my soup bowl. "I am so sorry about my breasts," I said with faux coyness. "They're always getting in the way. Here, let me just lift them to let you through." I hefted my bust from beneath, and fingers plunging into blue silk and creamy flesh, reshaped it so as to let the butler's gloved hand pass with the vessel.
"Cream of cucumber soup, Miss Fortnum," the butler said. "From my own garden," said Sir Rollo.
"I didn't know you could milk a cucumber," I said.
"You can milk mine,"
said Sir Rollo in a low, filthy growl that everyone except me pretended not to have heard. "I suppose you just rub and squeeze it," I said, "and eventually the cream shoots out?"
"Like pinching the teats on a fat, bloated pair of udders," said Sir Rollo.
"Oh, what fun!" I said. "You really are most witty, Rollo." I imbibed a silver spoonful of the pale, thick white liquid and attempted a seductive sideways glance at my purple-faced admirer, missing my mouth entirely.
"You got some on your breast," said Dicky,
nodding in the direction of my boobies and prompting more under-table business from Eggs Benedict.
"In fact, you've got some on both of them."
I looked down. Two thick scribbles of white gloop had indeed garlanded both of my fat, bloated udders. "Oh, how clumsy of me," I said. "Look, Rollo, your big cucumber has squirted its cream all over my magnificent bosoms."
"It's always doing that," said Sir Rollo. "Going off by itself."
I feel that at this juncture, I ought to point out that despite my excessively erotic outward appearance and eagerness to draw male attention towards it, I was still rather innocent. I had led an existence of rather cloistered privilege up until this, my 22nd year. I knew about the facts of life, the birds and the bees and all that. Jennings had been given the rather uncomfortable job of explaining all of that messy business to me back when I was still a scrawny 16-year-old stick insect of a thing. But fornication was an act I associated with dowdy middle-aged couples who engaged in it purely for the purposes of making sweet little babies. Believe it or not, the possibility had not occurred to me that people might engage in the act or in deconstructed forms of it for recreational as opposed to procreational purposes. Thus, although I knew that men, not all men, but some very discerning men, loved my big boobies, I'd rather dumbly not put two and two together. Or should I say, I had not put two and one together, two melons and one cucumber, if you take my meaning. It was not until later that I would come to know, and greatly appreciate, the booby-fixated gentleman's love of expending his pent-up seed between, on top of, all over, and in the general direction of my bosoms, having been escalated to furious penile rigidity by their very enormous quivering presence. For now, however, I lived in ignorance of this sticky reality. I lived to befuddle men with my body, be it clothed or nude,
and I enjoyed the attention for its own sake, content as I was with bulging eyes rather than bulging trousers, and drool rather than viscous bodily fluids of an altogether other nature. So the double meaning of my dinner-time conversation with Sir Rollo was, believe it or not, entirely lost on me. I genuinely thought we were talking gibberish about cucumbers and cream. In retrospect, perhaps lifting my boobies one at a time to my lips in order to lick the spilled cream of cucumber soup from their slopping expanses, all the while holding Sir Rollo's beady gaze from beneath my thick eyelashes, may have been interpreted as more suggestive than intended. It was delicious soup, and I simply didn't want to let any of it go to waste. And it was an excuse to get in a couple of further booby mentions for Eggs Benedict's ledger. His wrist was a positive blur beneath the table as he populated the tally in my honour. "Left booby clean," I reported, "and right booby clean." I licked a strand of white velouté from the side of my lip and continued to hold both boobies in question aloft, presenting them for Sir Rollo's inspection. The midnight blue neckline was covering my nipples still, but only just. The monocle gleamed in the candlelight.
"Pristine,"
he wheezed. "Here's a fun game," I said, still holding my breasts up. "When I let my boobies go, can you guess how many times they'll bounce?"
"How many times they... what?"
blustered Sir Rollo. "It's a game I play when I'm nude at home," I said. "I live alone, so I'm forced to play with myself in front of the mirror. Well, Jennings is always there, but he won't play with me. He helps at bath time on occasion when I'm in a hurry, and I try to turn that into playtime of sorts, but he takes my ablutions very seriously, bless him. Anyway, the game is that I lift my boobies up, the way I'm doing now, and then I let go. But before I let go, I guess how many times they'll bounce up and down. Shall we play the bosom-bouncing game together, Rollo?" Sir Rollo turned an even deeper shade of puce.
"I predict that your breasts will bounce 3 times,
he said, having contemplated the odds. "Is that your final prediction?" I said. "It would only be fair of me to advise you that my boobies really are very bouncy indeed. They may be alarmingly large, and they really are every bit as heavy as they look, but what isn't apparent until you see them in motion is how firm, rubbery, and well-sprung they are."
"Is that so?"
said Sir Rollo, deeply fascinated by my form. "They're certainly a lot bouncier than the suspension on Diggy's sports car," I said, "as we discovered on the very bumpy road from London earlier today. I was bouncing and wobbling all over the place for hours. Whenever we hit a pothole or a bump in the road, I came incredibly close to bouncing all the way out of my clothes. It would have been frightfully embarrassing."
"Half of London has seen your bosoms on stage, Felicity, old girl,"
Diggy jibed. He'd been out of the booby-mentioning game for too long now, and was clearly attempting to catch up. Ex-Benedict's pencil shuffled. "Not embarrassing for me, you see," I explained to Sir Rollo. "I just meant embarrassing for everyone else in the car. I myself have nothing to be embarrassed about. If it were up to me, I'd be getting my boobies out in public at every opportunity. It's just such a pity that society isn't ready for huge bare bosoms."
"Some of us are more open-minded,"
Sir Rollo hastened,
"more forward-thinking."
"And I'm far ahead of my time," I said, thrusting my boobies at the red-faced aristocrat. "Exceptionally far ahead."
"Glorious,"
was all Sir Rollo could say. I had him well and truly under my bosomy spell. "But back to the business at hand, as it were," I said, giving my still-hoisted aloft knockers a meaningful honk with my fingers. "You say 3 bounces, Rollo. I say 8. Ready?"
"Ready,"
said Sir Rollo, although he looked positively terrified and smitten in equal measure at the prospect of the busty undulations I was poised to unleash over the dinner table. I lifted my boobies as high as they would go, and then whipped my hands away to either side, submitting the heaving mass of breast meat to the forces of gravity. Down my boobies plummeted. The shelf of titty rebounded upwards, hovered, quivering. "That's 1 bounce, I commented, before my chest descended again, only to ricochet into the air anew. 2.
It's like time itself has been slowed down, gasped Sir Rollo, as my breasts performed their wobbling mid-air somersault. They floated downwards, landing on an invisible trampoline, then careened back in the direction of my chin.
Three! That's three booby bounces, Rollo, I said. Do you think there will be more? It looks like you might lose.
I don't care, said Sir Rollo, as his eyes followed the ponderous, endless trajectory of my chest as it returned to the bonds of Earth. There are no losers in this game.
My bosoms, being of very slightly differing size and weight, had by this point strayed out of synchronization and were reaching their low points and high points at slightly different times. Nevertheless, the butler timed his move immaculately, and when both breasts were more or less simultaneously at their apexes as part of the fourth bounce, he seized the opportunity to whisk my empty soup plate from beneath them. All in all, we counted 8 bounces before my breasts wobbled to the end of their, by now, entirely asymmetrical journeys between clavicle and lower ribcage. My boobies were even bouncier tonight than even I could have guessed. Dinner proceeded along similarly breast-centric lines, Dicky and I constantly trying to top each other's booby mentions, and Sir Rollo increasingly on the brink of some kind of seizure. Fabs looked appalled by the whole thing, but as one of the conspirators to the secret wager, was sworn to simmering silence throughout. Ex-Benedict could hardly keep up with keeping the tally, and by the time dinner came to an end, his writing hand had raced back and forth beneath the table so much that he could hardly lift the coffee cup. In fact, when the guests rose, he seemed to have some trouble standing up at all, the poor fellow. Out of earshot of everyone else, he beckoned Dicky and me thither to advise us that, thus far, despite my having tried my damnest to outdo him in the number of booby citations over dinner, Dicky had taken the lead. Jennings was laying out my nightie when I made it back to my guest room upstairs. I'd been rather quaff-happy on the old bubbly and lightly intoxicated. I found that my high centre of gravity was causing me difficulties in walking in a straight line. My bosoms would sway this way and that, steering me in all sorts of unexpected directions. I slumped down into an armchair and kicked off my heels.
"An enjoyable dinner, Miss Fortnum?"
said Jennings. "Most enjoyable," I said with a smile.
"Sir Rollo seems rather taken with you, if I may say so," said Jennings.
"More accurately, he seems rather taken with my bosoms," I noted.
"If you insist, Miss Fortnum," said Jennings.
I stood up again, the jutting mass of titty nearly toppling me forward. "Help me out of this dress, will you, old fruit?" Jennings hesitated.
I could perhaps find a maid to come and assist.
"Nonsense, Jennings. If you're feeling coy, then just get the buttons at the back and the shoulder straps, and I'll shimmy my way out of it." Jennings obliged, undoing the few fasteners that kept the dress on me. He stood back, and I did what I always did when too lazy to take off a dress in my hands. I shook my breasts gently from side to side until the upper portion flopped down to my waist. Then I gyrated my lower half as though hula-hooping until, in due course, the rest of the garment slipped down my hips and crumpled to the floor, leaving me standing wearing only cream knickers, white stockings, and the various fiddly bits and pieces of lingerie that held them in place. Jennings stooped to retrieve the midnight blue puddle of dress from my feet. "While you're down there, Jennings..."
"Yes, Miss Fortnum,"
I heard the valet say from down beneath the dual-domed expanse of breasts that obscured him entirely from view. "Be a chum and take off my knickers, would you?" I felt those deft hands flip clasps and clips, and then felt the waistband of the underpants pass over my buttocks. Jennings's hot breath wafting over the diamond thatch of soft hay that adorned my discreet pink mimsy.
"What does Miss have planned for tomorrow?"
Jennings inquired from my nether regions. "I thought I might let Sir Rollo see my boobies," I said, bracing myself from disapproval from the family valet. "What do you think?" Jennings indeed said nothing, merely cleared his throat as he rose to stand before me again. He still fully clothed in his valet things, I now completely nudie-nude. I caught sight of myself in the mirror opposite, lit from the side by the bedside lamp. I thought the old bod was looking in damn fine shape, tall, lithe, marvellously top-heavy. But one always needs a second opinion.
"Is Miss inquiring as to my opinion of the nature of her intentions, or to the nature of the...
appendages in question," said Jennings, valiantly maintaining eye contact in the presence of my nude physique.
"Appendages! Oh, you do have the most frightfully witty turn of phrase, Jennings," I giggled.
"Thank you, Miss Fortnum. One does one's best."
"I was talking about the appendages. Are they presentable at the moment and what not?"
"Presentable?"
"As in desirable. Are they likely to send a gentleman doolally, assuming he's into that sort of thing, of course?" Jennings took a step back and glanced down at my chest, and his eyes bulged somewhat as he took in the vista before him, pupils darting left and right from one booby to the next. He then took another step back, as though his field of vision were not wide enough to see my entire bust line in one go.
"Miss Fortnum, your bosom is looking quite magnificent."
"Do go on, Jennings," I said, unable to resist the small smile of pride.
"Firm, upswept, youthfully sculptural in form,"
Jennings began.
"And if I am not mistaken, they appear to have grown somewhat in overall size."
I had had my suspicions on the latter point, and was overjoyed to think that there was more Fortnum bosom on offer. "This is splendid news, Jennings," I beamed. "They've been feeling somewhat heavier on my chest of late, and I've noticed a rather more ponderous sway and wobble to them when walking. But given that they are, if anything, more impertinently upthrust and jutting than before, I assume that it must be my imagination."
"Miss has been most astute in her instincts," said Jennings. "It seems that when Miss's breasts grow, they tend to fill out in their lower hemispheres, forcing the bulk upwards."
"So the bigger they get, the shapelier they get?"
"Correct, Miss Fortnum."
"The more wildly erotic in appearance they become?"
"Indubitably, Miss Fortnum."
"Hold them, please, Jennings."
"Miss?"
A slight quaver in the unflappable valet's baritone. "Hold them, and tell me if they feel heavier to you." It was selfish of me, I know, to take advantage of Jennings like this. Really, I couldn't wait for a groping from Sir Rollo. I needed manhandling straight away, and Jennings' hands were as good a pair as any for the job. And after all, he was paid to do as I said, was he not? Ever dutiful, Jennings advanced, rubbed his hands, most considerately, to warm them, then cut my boobies tenderly from beneath. He hefted them upwards, furrowed his brow, and pursed his lips. "Do it properly, Jennings," I said. Jennings sank his fingers with delicate force into the dense, yielding substance of my bosoms. Gripping them thus, he began to slosh them around, up and down mostly, but also side to side. He let out a quiet but discernible moan. "Stop complaining, Jennings," I snapped. "Groaning and moaning like that, I don't ask much, really. All I want is for you to grope. I mean, grab my boobies and estimate their weight, vis-a-vis how heavy they felt the last time you held them."
"My apologies, Miss Fortnum,"
said Jennings, and concentrated on the task in hand, or in hands, should I say.
"The Fortnum bosoms are undeniably more substantial in mass and density than the last time I held them like this."
"That would have been..." I cast my mind back as Jennings continued to knead my knockers. "When we were attempting to establish whether my chest could be used as a convenient shelf upon which to carry a martini, so that I could keep my hands free at parties."
"A potentially groundbreaking scientific experiment," said Jennings as he recalled the results.
"Yes, it was more of a glass-breaking experiment, eh, what, Jennings?" I chimed in with grim humour. "There's certainly more than enough horizontal surface atop my chest to carry the base of a cocktail receptacle, but it really only worked when you were holding it steady. When my boobies aren't held in place, the way you're holding them in place now, Jennings, they're simply too bouncy to support fine surface wear."
"If Miss were ever to wear a corset, though,"
Jennings ventured. "Out of the question, Jennings," I exclaimed. "You know that very well. My boobies need to range freely, like hens. You can let go now, Jennings." Jennings eventually summoned the self-control to let go of my breasts, which bounced down and then up again, settling into their unsteady, quivering positions below my collarbone. "What's the weigh in, old chap?" I asked.
"I would estimate just over 2 pounds and 1 ounce in imperial weight," Jennings reported.
"Both together?"
"Each,
so approximately 4 pounds and 2 ounces as a whole.
That will give Sir Rollo's competition veg a run for its money, I giggled, patting my own competition veg with pride.
These are the melons and cucumber he intends to submit in the village fete this Sunday, I believe.
Correct as ever, Jennings, I said, and moved to the bed to peruse the skimpy translucent nightie which Jennings, the old devil, had laid out for me. Sir Rollo is taking me out after breakfast to inspect his melons, and it is there, in the seclusion of his garden, that I intend to invite him to inspect mine. Jennings stood there, looking politely away as I wriggled my way into the nightie. He cleared his throat in that way he did when something was amiss. "Out with it, Jennings," I said, in no mood to pry his views from him with my usual delicacy.
"Is this about the wager, Miss Fortnum?"
These things really did spread like wildfire around the servants' quarters. "How do you know about the wager, Jennings? No, don't answer that. You always seem to know what's going on, even when I do my very best to keep it from you."
"It's my job, Miss Fortnum," said Jennings.
"And you're dashed good at it," I said. I looked at myself in the mirror. My breasts were so protuberant that they lifted the hem of the nightie completely clear of my nude mimsy. And the only thing protecting the modesty of my bosom was the pallid pigmentation of my nips in their unaroused state, to which they had just returned, following the raging stiffness with which Jennings' ministrations had imbued them for the previous few minutes. Now, the same hue as my booby flesh, they weren't quite so discernible beneath the, to all intents and purposes, transparent fabric of the negligee. But even so, the garment somehow managed to make me look even more nude than I had been before I put it on. And I like that. Anyway, Jennings, what's your beef?
In view of your wager with Mr. Dixon, Miss Fortnum, I would advise against your proposed course of action with Sir Rollo tomorrow.
You don't think that showing him my boobies would be a sensible move? I began to descend into a petulant sulk. But you just said they were looking huge and magnificent. I arched my back and let my firm appendages strain at the negligee so tightly that I heard some seams unpick themselves below my armpits.
The hugeness and magnificence of your breasts is in no doubt, Miss Fortnum.
Jennings hastened.
And Miss is free to share them with whomsoever she wishes. That is really none of my business.
So what's the quibble?
I would give Sir Rollo's vegetable patch a wide berth. Expose yourself to him, by all means. I am sure you'll find in him a most appreciative audience, providing, of course, you manage to keep the encounter a secret from Lady Rosalind. But I expect that in the presence of your marvellous breasts, Sir Rollo might be given to behaviour of an over-enthusiastic nature.
I know, Jennings. That's the reason I'll be getting my knockers out.
And it's precisely this kind of behaviour that might result in damage to his pride and joy.
I promise to be gentle with it, I said, with naive uncertainty.
I mean the vegetables he intends to present at the village fete,
Jennings clarified. Nonsense, Jennings, I brayed. One eye full of these bosoms, and he won't care one way or the other.
Very well, Miss Fortnum,
said Jennings, and bade me a good night, leaving me to crawl between the silk sheets in my see-through nightie. Saturday. I awoke to the sound of crowing from outside. Knowing that I'd be treating a discerning breast lover to a look, a grope, a suck, and whatever else he fancied doing with my burgeoning opulences, I made sure to give them an especially thorough wash, and came up with what I thought would be a good idea. Jennings had been in early, while I still slept, to run me a hot morning bath in the adjoining private bathroom, but instead I filled the washing basin with warm, soapy water, leaned forward, and submerged my boobies, before realizing that the basin was, in fact, too small to accommodate all 4 pounds 2 ounces of me. All that happened was that my enormous dangling bosom displaced all of the water and very nearly got vacuumed stuck within the porcelain vessel. Having released myself by running my Vaseline-lubricated fingers around the edge of the basin until my boobies plopped free, I resorted to the bath after all. Breakfast, then, saw the continuation of the breast banter wager. I had dressed for breakfast, but only just. A floral dressing gown wrapped around my nightie, tied at the waist with a sash. my breasts swaying freely in the golden morning sun as the guests circulated, helping themselves to bacon, fried tomatoes, and scrambled eggs. Sir Rollo's monocle glinted.
Sleep well, my dear?
He asked me. I always sleep well, I replied. How, after all, can I not with these built-in pillows? Eggs Benedict's small pencil hovered uncertainly over the bookmaker's notebook he was using to keep the tally of boob mentions. I decided not to take the risk that innuendo might go over his literal-minded solicitor's head. My breasts, I mean, I said to Sir Rollo for avoidance of doubt. I know they look firm, but really they're ever so soft.
Fascinating paradox of a creature,
said Sir Rollo, bristling with delight as I bounced past with my breakfast. Lady Rosalind hissed something at Sir Rollo, and, chastised, he shuffled over to sit with her. Dicky had overslept and hurried in, realizing too late that, with Sir Rollo now out of earshot of his guest's conversation, he had missed his opportunity to sing my bosom's praises. "One up on you already," I giggled, seeing his frustration. "You really do have to rise early to get one up on me."
"Plenty left of the weekend,"
Dicky said, playing it cool. After breakfast, with his lady wife distracted by other business, Sir Rollo sidled up to me. Having feasted his gaze upon my partly exposed chest, he finally raised his eyes to meet mine.
"We have a rendezvous planned for this morning, I hope you recall,"
he said earthily. "How could I forget?" I said with a dazzling toothy smile. "We're going melon viewing, are we not?"
"Quite," said Sir Rollo with a leer. "But first, dear Felicity, would you like to see my cock?"
Sir Rollo's cockerel, named Chanticleer, was the bird that had stirred me from my bosomy slumber. It was a rather jaded, molting sort of fowl, picking around the small farmyard in the grounds of the house.
"An old cock, certainly," said Sir Rollo, perceiving my lack of enthusiasm. "But he's got it where it counts."
"His posture is proud and erect," I said, quite unable to summon to mind any words that didn't sound suggestive.
"Isn't it just?" beamed Sir Rollo. "All these hens around him keep him young."
"Reminds me of someone I know," I said, giving the lord of the manor a flirtatious nudge. "He even has the same discerning taste in the opposite sex. Look at all those plump breasts on the hens."
"On to the melons," said Sir Rollo, mopping his brow with a handkerchief as he looked me up and down with the same beady eye Chanticleer used to survey his harem of voluptuous chicken ladies. "The real purpose of our little walk through the grounds."
We crossed an array of poorly tended flower beds, Sir Rollo marching straight over them in his boots. I had changed into the tweeds which Jennings had thoughtfully laid out, a tight skirt, an even tighter jacket, beneath which grey wooden tights and a floaty pink blouse. I hadn't bothered with underwear, and if you've read this far, which you clearly have, then that won't come as much of a surprise to you, dear audience. I had left the top two buttons of the blouse undone to save time later. Through a scratchy, thorny hedge we went, into Sir Rollo's inner vegetable sanctum, like crawling through his hairy ear-hole and inside his head. And given the melons, pumpkins, and spherical and cylindrical objects that proliferated at various stages of ripe, juicy enormitude, it was probably a fairly accurate picture. It was as though he were growing his own pornography.
"What do you think, my dear?"
he asked, puffed up with pride. "You certainly are very skilled at growing large, round things," I observed.
"That makes two of us," said Sir Rollo,
his attention turning from his crop to mine. I was now veritably chomping at the bit to unleash my melons. "Shall we see whether mine are as competition-worthy as yours?"
"Yes,"
blustered Sir Rollo, clearly just as desperate as I was.
"For God's sake, let me see them."
In a trick I usually deployed to save time undressing, but which, given a suitably booby-crazed audience, was an equally effective erotic stimulant, I arched my back and inhaled to expand my bust to its outermost boundary of hugeness. the button popped off my tweed jacket, and then the blouse buttons I hadn't already opened gave up the fight as well, causing my blouse to part and its jutting rotund contents to wobble forth spectacularly. My nipples began the transition from their soft, warm, pale-clothed state to one of puckered, beckoning, goose-pimpled rigidity.
"By Jove!" exclaimed Sir Rollo eventually, as he surveyed my denuded voluptuosity with precisely the drooling enthusiasm for which I'd hoped. "There are no words."
"Then you must act, Rollo," I declared. "Grope my breasts, squeeze them, caress them, fondle them, and lick them." Needing no further encouragement, Sir Rollo set about my boobies like a man possessed. This was my first encounter with a member of the opposite sex confident enough to manhandle me with purpose and dedication, not another in the succession of rather coy young fellows who up until this point had provided what had passed for romance. And we won't even mention the men who ran a mile at the mere suspicion that I might be smuggling appendages of such brobdignagian proportions beneath my chemise. Sir Rollo was hardly what one might term dishy. Indeed, I surmise that he had probably looked very much the same as he did now all his life, only smaller. But he made up for his advancing years, expanding waistline and complete absence of any form of sex appeal whatsoever, in sheer enthusiasm for my boobies. To coin a gardening turn of phrase appropriate to the setting of this breast-groping frenzy, Sir Rollo was no shrinking violet. He was an animal. A dog with, as it were, a bone. He would grab one entire breast with both hands and slobber his mustachioed mouth all around the stiff, raw, increasingly sensitive nipple at its summit, sucking, rolling his rough tongue all around it, while his fingers played me like an accordion. The imbalance in attention saw me licking my fingers and then rubbing the other nipple in lazy synchronization. And the repercussions through my bosom, up my throat and to my prickling scalp, and back down the other way to that most intimate of spots between my thighs. It was electrifying. I just needed to find a man some 40 years Sir Rollo's junior, so that I could have some visual stimulation of my own to complement the, admittedly highly enjoyable, physical attention which this older peer of the realm was lavishing upon my bare buxomness.
"What a woman you are, young Felicity!"
Sir Rollo drooled as he surfaced from the plunging depths of the crevice that cleft my enormous twin domes of pert, wobbly loveliness.
"I don't mind telling you that I haven't had a stiffy like this since I was 25."
At the time, I rather naively thought he was referring to my stiff left nipple, which had seen the lion's share of his oral attentions. But even if I had been as skilled then as I am now at using my womanly assets to relieve men of their priapic engorgements, it still wouldn't have been enough to reverse the catastrophe which was to follow. Cavorting ever more enthusiastically around Sir Rollo's vegetable garden in a bouncy, gropey game of chase, I tripped over a thick, tangled vine, lost my balance, and fell backwards. Sir Rollo's hands were glued to my bosoms like magnets, and so, as I toppled, I pulled him down with me. In other circumstances, this may have led to an erotic escalation of our feverish coupling, but in this case, I happened to be standing at the time right in front of the melon patch, and we landed as a twosome right on top of the lot, with a horrible, wet splat, as the well-fed flesh exploded all over us. I looked down at my breasts, which were absolutely drenched in pink and green mush. "My melons!" I sobbed, wondering how I would ever clean all of it off.
"Your melons!" shouted Sir Rollo, picking himself up and surveying the devastation beneath us. "What about my melons?"
I sat up and looked around at the mess in which we sat. Sir Rollo's melons were demolished, to say nothing of his overgrown cucumber. Why the blazes was he so angry, I wondered. "There, there, Rollo," I said, wiping some juicy, fruity slop from my bare chest. "Small price to pay for a bit of fun with my titties, eh, what? It's just a couple of melons. You've lots more that we didn't land on." Sir Rollo was turning from the Dickensian shade of jolly red with which his rampant keenness for boobies had imbued his features to an altogether less happy shade of puce.
"Small price, too,"
he began.
"Those weren't just any melons, you clumsy oaf. Those were to be my submissions in the vegetable show at tomorrow's village fete."
"Oh," I said, realizing the severity of what my breasts had wrought. "Frightfully sorry, Rollo."